invites support and understanding for these women when they're in a difficult situation and then being forced to travel to a strange city and be away from their normal support networks. And I think that that's, and we're also, Access is also active in advocacy at the state level to try and change some of the policies around Medi-Cal to help the providers in terms of getting better reimbursement rates for Medi-Cal, which is why so many clinics aren't able to take Medi-Cal. It's not that they don't want to take Medi-Cal, it's that they can't afford it. And really trying to make sure that we have real concrete access to the full range of reproductive health services in California. And I just think that when you look, and with the election coming up on Tuesday, as everybody's been saying, I think that is the most immediate concrete thing that everyone can do is to vote. I know that people are frustrated, that they're disgusted, that as somebody earlier was saying, that the reaction is sort of like, I hate the governor, I hate the special election, I'm not gonna vote, I'm not gonna participate in this. And we need to remember that the people who believe that women cannot make their own decisions, that want to control people, that want to control the money in the state, that want to decide who gets services and who doesn't, those people are going to vote. So if you don't vote on Tuesday, then basically you're giving up the power to those people. And Prop 73 is the big reproductive rights bill. It's terrifying. I'm not sleeping, worrying about what's gonna happen if people really understand how important this is. Not just, I mean, for the thing that keeps me up is really the young women that we work with at Access and the young women who are already struggling to find a provider, who are already struggling to get to a clinic to, and even the women, the young women who have their parents helping them. We work with moms and teens all the time who are still trying to get transportation, figuring out how to pay for services, just finding information, honest, real information about what is available is so difficult. And to think that the teens who are the most vulnerable, who cannot talk to their parents, are the ones that are now going to have to, in addition to doing all of that stuff, figure out how to go to a judge, find a lawyer, go to the judicial courthouse, miss school, and you know that does not help the majority of teens. That it punishes the very small number, maybe, of teens that are the most desperate. And I think that if you really think about if we wanted to help families and young women and women make good decisions and protect their reproductive health, we would be providing comprehensive sex education. We would be helping people get access to safe birth control. We would be helping people, providing support and counseling and honest conversations in our lives about sex and relationships and if we want to become parents or not and how you discuss those things. And so that parents, you know, giving people real tools to be able to have these conversations instead of making the law that you have to notify your parents. And I think Lindsay mentioned earlier, I mean, all this law, obviously, Prop 73 would impact young women the most severely. But the way that it does it is really also by intimidating, it's fear-mongering against teens to make them feel like they can't get safe access to care unless their parents find out. It's fear-mongering against abortion providers because the burden of this falls on the provider to notify the parents. Now, how is the provider, if you say, oh yeah, send the letter, notify my mom, she lives at 123 Main Street, like, is the provider just supposed to mail it to there? How much work do they have to do? How it puts the liability on the provider to make sure that all these steps are followed, it puts the liability, it's going to intimidate those providers, it's going to make it much more difficult for the providers that really want to help teens to do it on a practical level, and the point is to basically drive people out of business and to make teens afraid to seek help. And we see that every day. We have, as I said, you know, I have information on the table. We have a newsletter full of stories of teenagers who have waited and waited, taken matters into their own hands, traveled out of state to try and find an abortion rather than tell their parents. That what we really need to do is build a culture that respects and supports women in trusting us that if you give us information and support that we can make these decisions, and that if a young woman says she cannot tell her parents, she cannot tell her parents. And to help her find support in other places and help families have the tools to have those conversations where they can, but making it the law is not going to do anything. So we see this here in California with Prop 73, we're seeing it on a national level. We have a new nominee for Supreme Court Justice who thinks that women should have to get the consent of their husband before they can get an abortion. If you didn't hear that, he was the only dissenting opinion in the Pennsylvania case saying, no, I think that's a great idea, that it should be the law that women have to get consent of their husband before they can get an abortion. Now, everybody else on the court disagreed with him, but, you know, now he's being nominated to the Supreme Court. And again, of course, you know, people should, you want people to have great relationships and healthy, loving relationships, but making it the law that I have to tell someone before I can get my abortion is not trusting me to know when I can tell them and when I can't tell them. So I really, really want just to encourage people to please vote on Tuesday, please get involved with Get Out the Vote activities, bring your friends. We can't, I know, again, it's frustrating, but this is a place where the voter turnout is looking to be some of the lowest ever. And if the Bay Area turns out to vote, we can defeat this initiative and a lot of the other horrible initiatives on there. So please get out on Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Parker, for that information. I want to let people know we have tables over there. There's lots of information. We really ask that people take it because nobody wants to take home literature. They are the people who brought the literature want to make sure we get it out into people's hands. So please take your time and peruse the tables and ask questions and make comments and have discussions, because again, that's what this is partly about as well, is we're all we all have ideas and we all have energy to basically build a movement to stop this onslaught against reproductive rights. I want to let people know that BayCorps does meet regularly. Our next meeting is going to be Sunday, November 13th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the UC Berkeley campus, 109 Wheeler Hall. If you go to where this blue tent is, there's these goldenrod half sheets with our next few meetings on. I encourage people to pick it up. The anti-abortionists have said that they're going to come back to San Francisco on January around Roe v. Wade. So we really want to get people out to basically build a movement to let them know that they are not welcome here, their ideas are not welcome here, that San Francisco and the Bay Area is a pro-choice, pro-reproductive rights area, region, state, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we need all of you, and then some out here basically to help build this movement. We all have a role to play. We all have something to contribute. So I encourage you all to, again, make new friends, exchange numbers, stop at the table, sign mailing lists so you can continue to get more information. I wanted to introduce our next speaker, Tanya Chase from ANSWER. And ANSWER, which many of you know, stands for Act Now to Stop War and End Racism. And ANSWER is responsible for organizing the anti-war demonstrations since 2001. And many of us here were at this exact location on September 24th, where we had over 50,000 people come out in the streets here in San Francisco. Please join me in welcoming Tanya from ANSWER.
Hey, everybody. I want to salute everybody who came out today to defend women's reproductive rights. Proposition 73 is yet another attack on women's rights that we stand strong in denouncing. The ANSWER Coalition here in the Bay Area believes that all women have a right to universal and comprehensive health care, which includes access to safe birth control and abortion. Not just rich people, but for everyone. We organized this coalition in September of 2001, the ANSWER Coalition, in reaction to the Bush administration's drive to war and attacks on the Arab and Muslim communities in this country. But war and racism are not confined to U.S. foreign policy. There is a war here at home that is deeply connected to the war abroad. This war is a war on women's bodies. It's a war on the LGBT equality. It's a war on people of color. It's a war on all working and poor people. One of our ANSWER activists is going through the crowd right now. She's handing out a flyer on our November 8th voters guide, because not only is Prop 73 an issue, but we also have the military recruiters in our schools that we want to vote against, and some other things. So if you all would take a flyer, also our table over there. The right wing professes to care about women. They characterize Prop 73 and their myriad of attacks on women as anti-violence, pro-family, and pro-woman. Yet at the same time, they perpetrate the worst kind of violence on women and men here at home and around the world. They could care less about the people of Iraq who suffer daily and the killings and abuses at the hands of the U.S. military. When Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans and thousands of people, primarily African Americans, were left homeless or were killed, I didn't see those right-wing anti-choice folks screaming to save the women and children, the families of New Orleans. Or what about the young Filipina woman gang-raped by U.S. soldiers on November 1st? This incident should not be seen as an isolated incident, but rather as part of a systematic sexual violence perpetrated against women by the U.S. military in the Philippines, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Palestine, in Haiti, and everywhere. The right-wing agenda is not just anti-woman and anti-choice. It's a program of injustice and inequality for all people. Choice is a woman's issue. Choice is an anti-racist issue. Choice is a working class issue. Wealthy business owners sponsored Proposition 73, putting forward the $1 million to gather signatures to put it on the ballot. And I agree with the previous speaker that this is about controlling their daughters and controlling the poor and the working people, and not about people's health and really caring about people and people's welfare. They said that Proposition 73 is about information, but their hope is to deny access to abortion altogether. This is just their first step. On the website for 73, they say that abortion should be reduced by 20,000 if this measure is passed. Does this really mean that 20,000 women will just decide not to get an abortion because they told their parents? No, it means that thousands of women will risk their health in unsafe, illegal abortions or trying to do it themselves. Proposition 73 is against women, people of color, the poor, and against all working people. But it isn't just a single proposition. Ever since Roe v. Wade passed, the right-wing misogynists have been trying to turn back the clocks. They would be happier if women were just relegated to our former position as property. If we study history, it's important to remember that the politician in power has not been important. For example, Roe v. Wade was passed under a conservative Supreme Court during a conservative administration. In addition, the Vietnam War was ended under a Republican. The gains made by the civil rights movement were gains made by the people struggling in the streets, not magically written into the law books by voting for the right candidate. Every gain by our movement was not handed to us, but was fought for in the streets. They were won in a series of hard-fought battles by a movement that took to the streets and used all the tactics at its command, from nonviolent demonstrations to self-defense, to win. We, the people, who refuse to surrender our rights, have the power to demand our civil rights and keep fighting until they are won, regardless of who is in office. The Answer Coalition has not only participated in major events to defend women's reproductive rights, like the Women's March last year in D.C. and the march this past January here in San Francisco, but we have spoken out against the attacks on women from the stage at the large national anti-war rallies that we've had, because this is the way we are going to defend women's rights, by building an anti-imperialist movement that makes the connections between the war on women's bodies and the U.S. war drive abroad. By building a movement that refuses to surrender our hard-fought gains and refuses to back down until we have won even more. Because women have a right to full access to birth control and to abortion on demand. Women and no one else have the right to decide for themselves. No on Proposition 73.
All right, thank you so much, Tanya. All right, let's do a little chant because people are kind of standing around, sitting around. All right, our bodies, our lives, our right to decide. Come on, our bodies, our lives, our right to decide. Our bodies, our lives, our right to decide. Our bodies, our lives, our right to decide. That's right. All right, we're thrilled to have with us our next speaker, Kimberly Alvarenga, who's with the Woman of Color Resource Center, where she is the Director of Economic Justice and Human Rights Program. Please put your hands together for Kimberly.
Hey everybody, how's it going? I'm out here today as a woman of color and as a woman. I'm out today to join my voice to the hundreds and thousands of women across this country that are raising their voices and taking action to end the attack on their reproductive rights. Let's be clear, there is a war on women's reproductive rights. Let us make sure we all understand the scope and the magnitude and fully understand that the war on reproductive rights goes far beyond just access to abortion. Women across this country, especially those that are marginalized, vulnerable, poor women, immigrant women, other women of color are being denied their basic human rights to contraception, to prenatal care, to health care, to affordable child care, to education, to a living wage. The right to lifers claim that they're about protecting and valuing life. If it were so, they would value life at all stages. Women's lives are not valued, and the policies that are implemented by this government right now, like taking away and cutting food stamps to those that need it the most, and cutting social services program, prove that they don't care about life. How are women supposed to make empowered decisions about their pregnancy if they don't have the resources? Instead, those in a position of power right now are using or imposing a religious ideology on us by attempting to control women's bodies. This ideology, the concept that life begins at conception, becomes more important to them than the real life needs that women have in order to make the best decisions for themselves and their families. By trying to impose this religious ideology as one that is only true, the one and only truth, the respect and value for all human life is lost. Why do I know this? I have my own personal experience with the pro-life movement. 15 years ago, when I was very young and a Christian, I was part and took part in some pro-life activities. I was active. I didn't know, I didn't understand. I was recruited and became active in the pro-life movement. I believed the ideology for a while. I thought that we were protecting and valuing life. It wasn't until I talked to the women outside of the clinics, until I heard their experiences and what was really going on for them, that I really understood. I started to think for myself. My own spirituality took me beyond religion, took me beyond to be really what it was to be pro-choice and pro-life. I realized that valuing and respecting human life means advocating for women to have the economic, the political, and the social power that they need to control their bodies. Since then, I have dedicated my life to the empowerment of women. True reproductive justice means the respect for human life. True reproductive justice and respect for human life means that it cannot be achieved until all women and girls have the economic, social, and political power and resources to make decisions about their own bodies. Thank you.
All right, let's give it up for Kimberly. See, this is how important it is for us to be out here, to do the education, to do the talking, because people do. They get convinced by the other side sometimes. But unless we're out there doing stuff and letting people know what's up, you know, people don't get the benefit of really the truth and what is really going on. So I really want to thank Kimberly for her remarks, because I think that is, again, an important transformation that she went through that a lot of people also are going through at the same time. Again, I want to welcome everybody to the BayCor rally for stopping the war on reproductive rights. BayCor is Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights. We're really pleased to have this rally, and I just wanted to let people know that we had a lot of endorsers that I wanted to share with you. We had the UC Berkeley students, No on Prop 73, Campaign for Teen Safety endorsing. Let's give it up for them. The California Coalition for Women Prisoners. All right. The Women's Health Rights Coalition Access. Radical Women. The Ruckus Society. International Answer. Code Pink. Refuse and Resist. The Freedom Socialist Party. The Office of Supervisor Rosmir Karimi. The Office's Councilwoman Nancy Nadell in Oakland. the Woman of Color Resource Center, Women's Choice Clinic, Asian Communities for Reproductive Justice, the Bay Area Chapter of the Socialist Party USA, and NARAL Pro-Choice California, just to name a few. I want to bring up my other co-MC who's up here, and she's got something she wants to say to you. Elizabeth.
I'm a fundraiser, and I can smell money at 100 yards. And I know that this is not a wealthy group, but I do know that each of us at least has 10 bucks or 5 bucks, and I'm urging you to put it in a bucket. Put your bucks in a bucket and support Baycor's work for organizing this rally, for doing the work that we'll do in January. Bernice, raise your hand. Bernice and Kurt have the bucket. So please, give generously. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is San Francisco Supervisor Ross Mirkarimi.
Good afternoon. You know, the very absurd irony and the absurd tragedy is that this nation is becoming the very nation that we fear abroad in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf. The reason why we have committed the intelligence design of a military crusade to try to subvert what Iraq used to be, a secular nation. I know, I've been to Iraq many times when Saddam was there and when he was not, to see that the balance of human rights and civil liberties in a fragile, secular, Muslim nation such as that, when women's rights were respected much more than as they are now, is the very mirror what is happening to women here in the United States. The fact is that we can use the barometer of what's happening inside Iraq, what is happening in other theocracy-like nations who once used to have the foundation of the same civil liberties backbone, of the same kind of human rights foundation we now see being compromised in this very country right here. The tragedy is the fact that much of the American public has been sold on the very need that through imperialistic aims, that companion to that mission is also requiring that we corrode the rights of women in third and second world nations throughout this globe. And we're letting this administration and we're letting this country get away with this particular purpose. This isn't an anomaly. This isn't a fluke. This is the dynasty of the Republican Party. This is where the Democrats fail, except the fact we're very proud recently that the Senate Democrats at least shut down so that they could have a closed-door session to decide and discuss why the Bush administration could get away with lying to us about the justification that took us to Iraq. All this is a barometer for where this nation hangs in the balance right now. And that comes to our very front door. How could you expect last year, less than a year ago, when a very, very steadfast, determined, pro-choice city like San Francisco would all of a sudden be host to thousands and thousands of pro-lifers who took buses from all around the West Coast, who besieged this city, a city that nobody would ever, ever do a double take to think that our rights would ever be thrown in our face and we would be without outrage, without the numbers and great numbers to overwhelm them and almost be fallen to the very fact that their numbers would have such bravado, where they would have such balls, where they would have such chutzpah, that they would actually come to a city or a state like this and tell us that we cannot protect and that we have no right to ensure the reproductive rights. If they come to our front door, a beachhead such as California, a beachhead like San Francisco, do you not think that they will not continue to push on in such a way that the only response that can be met from a city who has worked so hard from a state that has worked so hard and for people long before us who's worked so hard in order to enact the constitutional right of women to be protected, that they would try to breach that right even in a liberal, progressive, forward-thinking like San Francisco. This is an alarm, my friends. This isn't something where 50 of us gather together in Dolores Park and lament the fact that we're in a protected bubble. Get serious about this. Get serious about the fact that the right-wing extremism and the dynasty that we're propelling over in the Middle East is a mimic of exactly what's happening, even a progressive bastion like San Francisco. So when those right-wingers decide to take buses into this city in San Francisco, you don't turn your back and you don't say we're compassionate and we're tolerant of other views. Bullshit. What you do is, in the most firm but nonviolent way, is you go grab your neighbor. You go grab the person walking the dog. You go grab the shopper. You go link arms, and you surround them in great numbers. You do not let them come to this city, ever. You do not let them come to this city without them leaving, knowing very well that, yes, we will not be in your face in a violent way, but we will be in your face in a legacy that you will never forget, that how dare you ever come to San Francisco? How dare you ever come to the Bay Area? How dare you ever come to California? And how dare any of us to ever elect the kind of criminal that's in Washington right now? And how dare us to ever allow the loyal opposition, who is less loyal now to the Republicans, for ever allowing that obsequious, acquiescent behavior that has begun to induce the kind of incredible, unprecedented reality that we have to live with. This is not a minor game here. This is a game for keeps. While the Democrats really, really try to toy with the idea of how to take back the congressional elections, or hoping that they can come out with that magical candidate in the presidential election, the Republicans have already plotted the next 50 years. What they've done here today with the Supreme Court was already fashioned in Reagan's time. They knew it was just a matter of time. Clinton was just a slight interruption. This has always been on the trajectory to try to subvert, try to completely undermine the very good and the very love and the very heart that we put into policy on a federal, state, and local level, that they knew that they were undermined because they are loyal to a cause and disciplined to a cause that we ourselves take for granted. I say to all of us, left, liberal, independent, progressive, and common sense people, that we have to regroup and rally, never let our human liberties, never take our human rights and civil liberties for granted. And if anybody should ever flaunt them in our face, then you meet them face to face and make sure that they feel your power. Thank you.
I'm not quite that tall. Thank you, Ross Mirkarimi. We really need to work with our city and ask them what they're going to do for us. That was awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you so much, Felicia. Thank you. The next person to speak is Dori Perez from Berkeley Now.
Hi, I'm Dori Perez. I am from Berkeley Nationalization for Women on the UC Berkeley campus. Despite UC Berkeley's history of liberalism, we do have a campus where Feminists for Life and the Berkeley College Republicans have huge followings despite all our efforts. But there are good things happening. UC Berkeley Chapter of Now is involved with the Prop 73 coalition with the ACLU. We are doing phone banking, and we are doing as much as we can as hardworking students to really do our best to give our voice to this issue. As someone who recently became legal, I do remember how scary it was to, you know, have this issue be on the forefront of my mind. And I thank God that I got out of my teen years relatively unscarred. So again, I just want to say, from us third wave feminists like UC Berkeley, Thank you to the women who have gone before us, and it's so important that we honor their gift as well as continue to do our own. I am from Fresno, California. I have relatives who go to those churches who get those DVDs for Yes on Prop 73, and I feel like being in the Bay right now, I escaped a battle zone. But I think the most radical thing I could do is go back to Fresno and go back to Tulare and all those crap places and really try to spread the message, because it's so important for not only the Bay Area to be represented on this issue, but to see those Central Valley towns that have a lot to give but yet aren't reached out to really be tapped into. So thank you again so much, and thank you for your support.
Sorry, I shouldn't be chatting between the speakers. Nancy? Mimi? Mimi. The next person to speak is Mimi Solomon. She is a nurse practitioner at the Women's Health Specialists.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming to support such an important cause. Yeah, that's much better. I'm short. Can everybody hear me out there? Okay. So I'm Mimi, and I'm representing the Women's Health. You hear me better now? Okay. So I'm representing the Feminist Women's Health Center and Women's Health Specialists in Chico, Redding, Sacramento, Santa Rosa, and Petaluma. Thank you. Our sister clinic, the Women's Choice Clinic, has a table over there. Please go and visit them. And thank you again for coming out to support this important cause. No on 73! Yeah. Today, the Feminist Women's Health Center celebrates 30 years of helping women understand their bodies, obtain birth control, and get safe abortions. We celebrate each other and honor those who have gone before us in the fight to keep abortion safe, legal, and available. Abortion is being threatened, but every day obtaining an abortion in rural Northern California is a challenge. In Northern California, we are already challenged with provider shortages, lack of funding for poor women to obtain later abortions, and anti-abortion protesters who stalk our employees and harass and intimidate unsuspecting women. Anti-abortion activities have repeatedly targeted our clinics, making abortion a political, religious, and social controversy. This is my body. I decide what I want to do with it. Despite these challenges, we have emerged as leaders, bringing court challenges against the anti-abortion activists, which have proven to be a national model used by others. Despite all of these challenges, we keep our doors open, providing services every single day. So what can we do? We can't depend on our politicians, we can't depend on voting, and we certainly can't depend on justice in our government. But we can. We can build a network of women who will make and stake their lives on reproductive justice for all women, for teens, for the poor, for the disabled, and for women who are marginalized and forgotten. This network will build communities of women who have self-determination at their core. This network of women will bind client to clinic, clinic to community, and woman to woman. This network will foster and build on the strengths that we hold collectively. Male domination cannot exist without the subjugation of women, and we will not be subjugated. This network will lead the way for our daughters, granddaughters, to live in a world where they can have true sovereignty over their bodies. This feminist network will be rooted in the work of providers who stand with women on a daily basis to provide healthcare free of coercion and fear. This network is a call for action, a call for action for transporting women to clinics, for providing housing for women who have traveled to distant communities for late-term abortions, and for becoming sustaining donors and advocates of independent clinics who fight tirelessly to protect a woman's right to choose. This is vital work, And to remain women-driven, it is critical that your local independent women's clinic must have financial independence. We cannot rely on our government to fund our clinics. This is, keep it so your community clinic belongs to your community. Raise funds for your choice and for our rights. Start today. Everyone has something we can do. Today marks the day that we begin the battle for the lives of our daughters, our mothers, nieces, cousins, friends. You can do so many things. You can call your local independent clinic and ask how you can help them. And you can see what you can, if you can't give money, you can always give time and support. That's the one thing we need, is we need people to show their support and let the people in the government know that we do not stand for what they're trying to tell us to do with our bodies. Let us stand together to resist the further colonization of our bodies and our lives. Let's keep the vision, a world where women control their own bodies, reproduction, and sexuality. If you want to email us any support, questions, or comments, you can email us at mail@womenshealthspecialist.org. No on 73, and no against all the injustices of the people who do not count in the eyes of George Bush and those other people who really don't count in my eyes.
Thank you so much. Hello. All right. Okay, this speaker. What was that? Is that feedback? The next person to speak is Chris Carlson. Chris Carlson is an activist and a great writer, and he has made a wonderful website for San Francisco called Shaping San Francisco. It's the history of San Francisco, written by the people who live here and really participate with it. And he is a man who, well, I'll let him tell you who he is, but he's a fabulous guy. Give it up for Chris Carlson.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It's great to be here at a Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights rally. It's a fantastic organization that's been going on for way too long. It's a pity that we still have to struggle and fight and maintain the effort to maintain our most basic rights. But as she mentioned, Shaping San Francisco, you might want the historical context. If you go to that website, you can find a reproductive rights rant that was published in Process World magazine back in 1991. During the Operation Rescue fights that were going on around here. So I really strongly recommend you check that out. I was asked to speak today partly because I'm male and partly because I've actually been a party to at least four abortions, possibly more that I don't know about, but for sure four. And I think that already underscores one of the interesting problems of how we think about abortion rights, because the issue is always situated in the women's body. And it's absolutely correct. I mean, finally, it is the woman's decision to make about whether to go forward with a pregnancy or not. But here I am, somebody who's participated in causing pregnancies on a number of occasions, and I don't always feel like it's the right thing or the wrong thing, one way or the other. It's something that has to be decided socially. But I really resent the idea that it's somehow okay to criminalize the discussion around women alone, and guys are somehow off the hook and have nothing to say about it. So there's something really perverse about how we let the conversation go forward where the men are systematically removed from the discussion. So I've really benefited from growing up in this period of history. I'm 48 years old now, and as I came of age and started to be able to participate in making pregnancies, Roe v. Wade was already the law. And so for me, it was easy to have that kind of casual, blind relationship with procreation that people in previous generations simply couldn't have. So there's some kind of direct right and benefit and expansion of our sense of freedom that I feel really, like I personally totally benefited from, and everybody here continues to benefit from, and it's really important that we maintain it. So now we face this Proposition 73 issue. I would call that the shame of the patriarchs. These are people who are so lost in their own communication with their own families. They're so concerned about trying to maintain control, and the idea that there might be real control, real engagement through actual back and forth dialogue and consultation, it's beyond their comprehension. So these are people who are politically in favor of shrinking the state, drowning it in a bathtub, denying it the revenues to take care of each other, et cetera, et cetera. And here they want to turn to the state to become the guarantor, the enforcer of a consultative process with their children when their children won't speak to them precisely because they're deaf, dumb, and blind. So obviously Prop 73 has got to be thrown into the trash can as we go forward. Now, I do have a daughter, and I got to say, she's an amazing human being. She's 21 years old. She's a totally engaged, politicized, fantastic human being. And I'm proud to say that if she was going to have any issues around her own ongoing life with pregnancy, child rearing, relationships, et cetera, she comes and talks to me because we have an open relationship where I don't have to, like, tell her she's wrong for making terrible mistakes or anything like that. These are the predicaments we all face. We need to find a way to essentially deal with each other with compassion. And if you can have a compassionate relationship with your own children, the whole world is softened and humanized by that. So the people who are trying to push through 73 obviously don't even have a clue what a compassionate relationship with their own children might be. If they think the state is going to somehow make it better, they are seriously delusional. Now, of course, we're also faced with a Supreme Court decision going forward, and unfortunately, I doubt if we're going to win on that one. But the fact of the matter is for the rest of our lives, we're going to face this drama of the state trying to impose a lost, dying patriarchal order on all of us. And all of our lives are degraded by that reality. So we have to fight that as much as we can. But really, the key point here is that, as it's been referred to on several previous speakers, it's a culture war. We are in the middle of one of the most dire and severe culture wars that this country has faced. It's really a carrying on of the Civil War in certain fundamental respects. And so as we face a culture war, it does not behoove us to constantly be on the defensive and constantly reacting to the initiatives of the other side. There's an old saw from sports, of course, which is that the best defense is a good offense. And I think insofar as we're in a culture war, we really start to have to ramp it up and move to a much larger vision of what it is we're fighting for. So the fight over reproductive rights is not just a fight over the immediate defense. It's actually a fight over the basic activity of human beings, reproduction, something that we usually, when you're in the middle of it, call labor. And there's a good reason for that, because it's really hard work having a baby. If you haven't done it, watch out. It's hard work. But anyway, it's the labor of reproduction, which has been a source of so much energy, work, and finally, workers for capitalist development. That's why there's such a struggle over it. It's who's going to control the rise and fall of available labor in society. And the key issue for the capitalists is, do not let women make their own independent decisions about when they're going to reproduce or not. Make sure there's an endless supply of new workers for the workforce. Now, the institution of slavery provided untold surpluses to fuel the early growth of capitalism. That's pretty widely acknowledged. What's not so widely acknowledged is the way women's domestic and reproductive work has gone unpaid and unrecognized as work for centuries. Today's fight, then, is not merely a fight over legal abortion, but really a fight to control our own labor, and not just women's work, but all of us. Let's face it, most of the work we do is a huge waste of time, if it's not actually pernicious or totally trashing the ecology of the planet. So the fight over reproductive rights leads us directly to a fight for social control over our work, something we don't even have conversations about yet, and the whole apparatus of scientific research and development. Why is birth control technology so feeble? Why has the public health system been allowed to deteriorate to the point of near collapse? Why don't we have free, universal medical care from the wide range of available medical systems in the world? As we gather to protest further destruction of our freedoms and rights, we have to remember that we have to go forward. Asking to be left alone will always be ignored. Voting no on Prop 73 is important, but let's go on beyond that to much bigger targets. Life can be radically better than it is. Let's remember that as we have all these defensive conversations about protecting our rights. This life is seriously inadequate, and it can be radically better than this. And I could think of no more likely political force to bring that into being than mobilized, articulate, passionately free, and independent women. Thank you.
That was fabulous. And I agree with everything he said. Our next speaker is Becky Lyman. She's a member of Radical Women. She is a revolutionary socialist feminist harpsichordist, and she's working on a book about her biracial Thai Caucasian identity. Becky Lyman.
How are we feeling today? Are we angry? Prop 73 is an attempt to rob young women of their fundamental rights over their own bodies. We're not going to take this, and these women can't even vote. That's why it's so crucial that we stop this initiative from becoming law and give these women the voice they don't have. Prop 73 is only one of the many attempts to turn back Roe v. Wade. It's both an attack on the courts and the legislature. John Roberts defended the anti-abortion group Operation Rescue, which threatened abortion clinic in the 80s, and he also wrote that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided and should be overruled. Bush's new Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito is no better. He's hostile against a woman's right to choose. His 91-year-old mother said of her son, "Of course he's against abortion." Now Schwarzenegger's trying to go along with more than 20 other states in this country and make parental notification the law in California. Teenagers and children should have rights. This will only shut down the civil liberties of a young woman when she must make one of the most important decisions of her life, to choose to have an abortion or to raise a baby. This is an overall attack on all women in this country. I am a low-income woman of color of Asian and Caucasian descent who in no way could ever afford at this point in time to financially or emotionally bring a baby into this world. It would be a disaster. And I'm sexually active. If I got pregnant and abortion were made illegal, I don't know what I would do. I suppose I'd have to go to a foreign country. But these attacks on women are a trend going around internationally. The war in Iraq is only another place where women are the first victims. Iraqi women are suffering from extreme discrimination and sexism. The U.S. occupation has led to the rise of the Islamic fundamentalists who think a woman's place is only in the home. Women can't even go out of the house without being escorted by a man, and they aren't allowed to work. Even worse, U.S. troops shoot at cars that hold pregnant women in them on their way to the hospital, killing not only these women, but their unborn children and their families as well. Entire families are bombed by Allied forces. I stand in solidarity with the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, which is in constant battle to support the rights and save the lives of women and men in Iraq. This is not only a war in Iraq, but a war at home. These right-wing attacks aren't only on women, but on men and the rights of all people. Instead of supporting the workers, queers, students, the disabled, the elderly, social services and education, amongst other democratic institutions, these people in charge of this capitalist system are in favor of the corporations and religious zealots. It's a losing battle if we look at only one issue like abortion by itself, because that issue can't stand the fight alone. The good news here is that we can build a militant, multi-issue feminist movement in the streets that's going to come back and conquer this sexist, racist government. When I say multi-issue, I mean a movement that demands not only safe, free, and unrestricted abortion to all women, rich or poor, white or of color, but free, safe birth control, an end to forced sterilization, especially to poor and women of color, guaranteed prenatal care, free 24-hour child care, an abortion covered for federal employees, Native American women living on reservations, and military personnel, amongst other women. We must demand housing for low-income women to raise their children and affirmative action for women and families of color so that they can strive in our society. Some people say that demanding more than one issue on a platform makes it difficult to organize. But we have to make several demands if we are fighting to strengthen a social justice movement. What are we going to do if we win on only one issue like abortion, or if we only demand that the troops come home? What are we going to do when the troops do come home? We know we can't rely on a Democrat in office to guarantee our rights. The Democrats didn't stand up against right-wing judges like John Roberts, and they cut welfare for women. then there are all the other problems that are left unaddressed and unresolved. We need to look at all the connecting related issues together. In addition to gaining full reproductive rights and stopping the war, we need to replace this failed capitalist system, which has displayed itself in the tragedies of Hurricane Katrina and in Iraq, with a socialist system that shares the wealth with the most oppressed people. We can't continue with a government that carries through with bigoted laws and imperialist wars. The current system profits when women are forced by unwanted pregnancies to remain in the pool of cheap, short-term workers instead of taking leadership in this country. We need a socialist system that will ensure access to reproductive rights, education, child care, medical care, pensions, and employment for all. This can happen. We have to come back here. We can't let ourselves disperse and go home and forget about all this in the back of our minds. We have to come back in the streets. If you want to get involved in building a successful movement that will overthrow this current system, come by our Radical Women table and talk to us. We have literature. We have plans. We want your ideas. Let's work together so women will be free. Join us. Let's win together.